Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, hello. A very warm welcome into Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our opportunity as blind or partially sighted people to get together each week and explore the world of accessible technology. How's it going for you? Do let us know. TechTalk at rnib.org.uk. T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be talking with Be My Eyes and their recent announcement with Meta. We'll also be hearing about the Scribe Me app. Plus, Callum Stoneman will be taking that new Braille screen input for a spin on iOS 18. That's all coming up this time on Tech Talk. A very warm welcome in to our co-hosts this week, Jackie Brown, Callum Stoneman, and Hubert Pavalkovich. Good to have you all with us once again. Let's find out what's happening in your worlds. Jackie, what's new with you?
Well, not exactly new, but we do get customers who ask us about reading apps. And also, there is still some merit in a standalone reader or software. One of the software packages that doesn't get mentioned so much anymore that we quite like is called DocuScan. And I've had reason this week to be doing a lot of paperwork and reading letters and so on, and DocuScan is really it's a really good piece of software if you want to use it on Windows or on your Mac, and it has some really nice features, so it's worth considering. Yes, it's $299, probably something similar in our money, but it is still a good alternative if you're looking for something. A lot of people still can't use their touchscreen phones or find it really difficult to take pictures. Of course, we take it for granted that there are so many apps out there now that will read your mail. But, there are still some people that like having a scanner and like having a good piece of software to read on their computer. So that's definitely one to look at.
Right. So you need a flatbed scanner to use this.
You do. Yeah, you could get something like a Canon Light, and you can get an all-in-one printer scanner if you want to go down that road. But it is a really good piece of software. It's very good at putting if there are headings in the documents or if there are links in the documents that you scan, it actually does them really well. So you could just click on the link in the document that you've just scanned, and it would take you to that web page. So, there are some features that are quite good in it that the other competitors like K1000 yet still around, and OpenBook, they don't do that.
That is quite nice. I've tried out a couple of these free scanning apps previously, and I know you get what you pay for, of course you do. And they were not specifically designed for accessibility, but I've tried them out, and they've done a fairly good job, but they didn't carry over any formatting, and links and email addresses, for example, were a nightmare because they wouldn't go as actual links. So you'd have, visit, and then you try and select all the, https://, all that kind of stuff. You had to try and select it manually and copy it, and that sounds really good.
And very often, the links in a document that's not formatted, half of it's on one line and then, half of it's on another line. So you've got a space or whatever. But I have to say that I find DocuScan's really good. I've tried it quite a few times going to a link in a document that it's scanned, and it does take you straight there. So that is, that is quite useful. And one of the merits of having kind of a software-based scanner on your PC.
Great stuff. Well, it's good to know that those options are still available, particularly if you've got a lot of paper to scan, a lot of hard copy, books or old documents or things that just haven't been digitized for whatever reason, right? And as you quite rightly point out, Jackie, sometimes holding a camera can be tricky. So getting more accuracy and that flexibility, like you say, with the formatting and links and so on. Callum, what's grabbing your attention this time?
Well, apart from the Meta Connect event, which has brought about quite a few exciting announcements, the Next Big Thing competition is back. So this was from Freedom Scientific, the of course, the developers of JAWS. Last year, they ran a Next Big Thing competition where basically users of JAWS could submit their ideas for what they think should be included in the next version. And this brought us, in last year's case, it brought us the improvements that we're now seeing to Picture Smart, where it's using AI for image descriptions. And that competition is back. So you can submit a 3-minute video presentation of your idea, and the winner will get $1,000 Amazon gift card, not bad, and a 5-year JAWS or Fusion license, depending on what you need. So it's back.
There we are. Hubert, you're keeping quiet.
I've been spending money and purchasing new tech.
Oh, right.
Oh, dear.
I've bought a new Braille display. My first one.
Oof.
Oh.
Talk about spending money.
Your new Braille display.
How much did that set you back?
Well, it's my first one. It's my first Braille display, in fact. I'm getting back into reading Braille and trying to implement it a bit more into my work to make certain things a bit easier and in certain ways also reduce the amount of screen reader listening I have to do, especially when I'm dealing with multiple audio sources at the same time.
What did you go for?
I've gone for the Mantis Q40, yay, which I had demonstrated to me. And actually, I do agree with what most people say, where it's one of these Braille display that is very much usable for its intended purpose. And you also get the best of both worlds. You get the QWERTY keyboard for quick typing, which I do. And also, you get, obviously, the Braille display element for reading.
What made you decide that just the screen reader speech alone wasn't cutting it for you, that you really needed to kind of get back to Braille? I'm really interested in this.
I think what really encouraged me to get back into Braille is how I rediscovered Braille typing. And since then, I wanted to, for example, when I do radio shows, you know, when I have to listen to a screen reader, listen to the audio that's coming out live, and also listen to, like, the producer as well, I just find, one, I wanted to eliminate a bit of audio that I don't necessarily need to listen to, and there are other ways of doing it. And two, I quite like to be able to, you know, check certain devices without having speech coming out of the speaker all the time. And it gives me an extra privacy. And also, Braille reading is actually something I've realized I quite missed because I used to read it more. And I just quite like the ability to be able to use a device without necessarily having to listen to synthetic speech all the time.
Yeah, and it's not either or, is it? It's like, actually, there are gains to having both Braille and audio.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly, and that can, you know, there's things like the work-based situations where if you're in an interview, you can read the question and focus on the person's answer without having the screen reader talking to you at the same time as the person you're interviewing. But also, it's the little things. I was listening to music on my phone, and I didn't have to have speech interrupt it, and I could still use my phone just as well. So it's sometimes the little things as well that make quite a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, I find spelling is where it comes into effect for me, especially if I'm dictating something, and, you know, like things that you wouldn't pick up with speech, like, you know, the two different types of there, you know, it can get those wrong. And some will say it's not a big deal, but, you know, if you're sending a professional email, people do pick up on that sort of thing.
Yeah,
absolutely. And when you're reading text as well, you want to know how something's spelled, especially if it's complicated, and sometimes it helps you to figure out pronunciation of certain tricky names and such. So it is quite an amazing experience. And I've actually found it quite surprising how quickly I've remembered reading Braille and all the various, you know, contractions, because I thought it would take me some time. But actually, I find it like riding a bike. A lot of it came back to me pretty quick, because I started on grade one on Monday evening when it arrived. By yesterday afternoon, I switched to grade two.
I'm loving it. I'm loving getting back into Braille, because I abandoned Braille for quite a few years. I think when I left
school.
I know,
Laura.
Terrible. No,
I
did. I shouldn't, that's something I definitely shouldn't say with Dave and Jackie around. But
no, definitely not.
No, you know, the same thing happened to me, Callum. The same thing happened to me. I put it down for quite some time. So go on, what brought you back?
Well, a couple of things. One of them was, as Hubert said, like just too much speech going on, especially when I started going back into the office. You know, you might be having a conversation with people and then an email would come in, and then I've got to put my headset on to listen to it and to respond to it. And people would, because I had the headset on the whole time, people would think I was always on a call. So people didn't want to approach me and, you know, have a conversation. So there was that. But then as I started using it more, it was, I felt like I was understanding things better. I was, you know, my spelling has improved. And now more recently, it's things like, I'm just seeing the value more and more. It's things like being able to read to my son, for example. You know, I've mentioned before, we've got a little baby, and being able to read to him, you know, actually read rather than having like an earpiece in and, you know, not being fully there. Being able to actually read to him is going to be nice. So there's all sorts.
Sorry, I've never abandoned Braille and I never will. They don't call me the queen of the dots for nothing.
Well, I just didn't think I needed it, Jackie Brown. You know, when I was a teenager, I thought it was something weird and Victorian separated me from other people. And I didn't realise until I was a little bit older and got into work and became a parent that actually Braille meant I could do more of the same things as other people that didn't separate me. And as we heard there, Callum saying Braille made him a bit more sociable because more approachable because you're not always listening to something else. Something else I wanted to kind of throw onto the pile as well. Last week, there was a post from Jenny Leif Lurry, who is Microsoft's chief accessibility officer. Anyway, this is about the new Outlook, and Jenny saying that the new Outlook, it's the future of mail, calendar and people on Windows, and this is live today and shipping with all new Windows 11 devices. However, and I think this is the important bit, Jenny writes, before you ask, Classic Outlook will be available until 2029.
Oh, wow.
So that was a little bit longer than I was expecting.
Yeah, I thought it was going at the end of this year, the end of 2024.
Yeah. Jenny wants to draw our attention to some of the new accessibility features that have been added, such as Immersive Reader, Dictate, Zoom, Themes, and the accessibility checker. Also, they've added in the keyboard accessibility now a little bit more with things like Control Y, you know, to jump between folders. So some new shortcuts there. They're aiming for consistency. They've improved the tabbing around experience. So it does sound like things are going in the right direction. And there is a little bit of respite for people who still need the classic Outlook.
Ah, brilliant. Yeah, it's good to know that that's staying around. But I'm going to revisit this this new Outlook and try out some of these keyboard shortcuts and accessibility features that they've added, because last time I used it, which wasn't that long ago, a couple of months ago maybe, it was difficult, let's say that.
Well, let us know if you've tried the new Outlook or if you've recently got back to Braille or not. We'd love to hear what's new with you. If you've had a new technology experience lately, then do get in contact. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But for now, Jackie Brown, Callum Stoneman and Hubert Pavalkovic, thank you very much.
September has been a busy month in the world of technology. We, of course, had the Apple event a couple of weeks ago and new hardware and new software from them. And more recently, we've had the Meta Connect event where the company were showing off their latest products and what they've been up to. Our friends at Be My Eyes were part of that event with a big announcement. And joining me now to talk all about this is Hans-Jørgen Weinberg, the founder of Be My Eyes. And welcome back to the show to Andy Bailey, Chief Marketing Officer. Welcome to you both. I'm guessing your inboxes are absolutely flooded at the minute, so thank you for joining us.
Pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Callum.
I want to start with you, Andy, first, because we had you on a few weeks ago talking about the Apple Viz acquisition, and I did ask about wearables, and you gave a kind of vague, you know, we're working on it, we're working with a few people. Has it been hard trying to keep this under wraps? Because I know I'm not the only one who's been asking that question.
To be honest, Callum, it has. we've been very good partners, and as has Meta on this, we won't hopefully have heard anything from either of us. But I think the speculation in the marketplace has been almost at fever pitch, you know. So it has been difficult to keep lids on it, but we wanted to be as transparent as possible, and we also obviously wanted to showcase the announcement at Meta's main event at Meta Connect. So we felt that this was the right time to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's not keep the lid on it any longer then. For those who haven't heard, what was the announcement from the event? What was the big takeaway?
The big announcement was an announcement between Be My Eyes and Meta, primarily about a joint development partnership, a sort of co-development partnership and a go-to-market partnership. Our engineers, their engineers have been working together along with product management, product marketing, and so on, to bring accessibility tech to a new level, if you like, a new level of hands-free ability. So what we announced was A, that partnership, but B, the first product in that partnership, which is the loved Be My Eyes Call a Volunteer service available on the Ray-Ban Meta smart glasses, completely hands-free. And obviously with access to our now 7.7 million sighted volunteers around the world. So it was a big exciting announcement for us, and I think equally for Meta as well.
And I can say that it has been one of the by far the most requested thing that we could do. Be able to use Be My Eyes hands-free is so convenient. If you have a guide dog and a white cane, then it's a little hard to hold the phone as well. And also sometimes when you are in the kitchen, it's just very inconvenient to get the phone out of the pocket and so on. But if you can have a pair of glasses on and just say, hey, Meta, Be My Eyes, and then you initiate a call and you get a volunteer and so on, then you can do a whole lot more in a very convenient way. So we are very excited about being able to actually provide this, and also the fact that these Meta glasses are not exactly free, but they are at a very low price point compared to many other solutions we have seen over the years. So financial accessibility is also a point. I'm well aware that not everybody can afford $249, but it's really a lower price point than we have seen before.
This has been what's got us all talking with the Meta Ray-Bans, I think, because they are quite a reasonably low cost, but more importantly, they're mainstream, and I think that means that they are able to be at that lower cost, and it's not relying on a small company like yourselves to maintain that and to finance that. Let's talk about the features that are available. So you mentioned the volunteer calls. So it's just the calls at this stage, right? There isn't Be My AI there yet.
For the moment, no. So we wanted to, as you might expect, we wanted to work with Meta and produce a great user experience. And we decided together to focus on, as I said, the sort of the original heart and core of our offering, which was Call a Volunteer. It's an ongoing partnership. This is not a one-off product. So we're continually looking at the next things that we'll be offering. But for now, we wanted to make sure that first, loved feature of Call a Volunteer worked well, was elegantly designed, very tightly integrated with the platform. Wasn't just something that sat on top of something else, hence the engineer-to-engineer work. So that was really our focus at this stage.
And so when we're using this as a user, because Hans kind of alluded to there, you can just say, hey, Meta, Be My Eyes, and it will, that's all it takes, is it? Once it's set up, that's all it takes to make a call? It's built into the Meta assistant, if you like?
Yes, of course, when you get the glasses, you need to have the Meta View app, and you need to connect that app to your Be My Eyes account. But when you have done that, you can just put on the glasses and say, hey, Meta, and then say, Be My Eyes. Or you can say, hey, Meta, call a volunteer on Be My Eyes or something like that. There's a few different ways you can say it. And then you will start the call. So it's super easy. And it's it's even easier than if you are making a video call to someone on WhatsApp or Messenger, because then you do have to double tap the glasses to make it a video call. But with Be My Eyes, it will start as a video call immediately. So it's even easier than on some of the other platforms.
It's probably also worth mentioning another example of that tight integration, which is, as Hans said, once that initial connection between the glasses and your smartphone is made, you don't really need to go through that again. But the smartphone does play a role, right? So, for example, you might be talking to a volunteer and they're looking through the camera of the glasses at whatever you're facing, giving you a description in the on-ear loudspeakers in the glasses. I don't know if you've got a pair, but the speaker quality is really quite something. But they actually sit on your ear, so they don't interfere with whatever other ambient noise might be going on in the room. But with a simple double tap on on the right-hand arm of the glasses, there's a little button, but a simple double tap on that button switches the view of the volunteer through to the smartphone.
Ah,
And
okay.
a double tap again switches it back again, right? So, and that can be quite useful. You're effectively switching from an outward-facing worldview on your glasses to your smartphone. And you can move your smartphone around if you like, to perish the thought, you might even turn it around and start doing a selfie. I'm not suggesting you should do that, but you can perhaps use the smartphone for other things. Some very, very small text, for example, on a document that you can zoom in on or something like that. And then double tap, and then you're back on the glasses again, or rather, the volunteer is back on the glasses again. You wouldn't get that level of elegant functionality unless it was very tightly done between, our respective engineers. That's what I mean by co-development.
Yeah, in answer to your question, I haven't got a pair, but I'm very, very tempted, especially now. I've been hovering over the buy now button for several weeks, just kind of thinking, I don't know, is it too early? Is it, do they quite do what I want? But this has made me even more tempted. What's the video quality like? Because I assume you've been doing this with beta testing. It's probably a bit unfair to compare something of this form factor to like the latest, iPhone 16 Pro Max camera with all its fancy features. But, is it comparable in any way to, say, your smartphone's camera quality that the volunteer gets?
If I remember rightly, it is a 12 megapixel camera in the glasses. I have no doubt that is going to get better and better, just like any early technology as we go forward. I'm sure every iteration of the Ray-Ban Meta glasses is going to come out just like smartphones do with the next greatest camera within them. But that's probably a question for them. So 12 megapixels is not bad. It's pretty good. But you're right. It's not quite the same as some of the most advanced cameras in the latest phones. Another reason why I think Meta themselves were very keen to allow switching to the smartphone when needed, right? Ideally, you won't need to do that for most things. You're just pointing your face at whatever. But for those handful of cases where higher definition might be needed, there's a facility to do it.
It also has a quite wide angle, so it will be perfect when you're out and about. And as Andy say, if you need to read some small text, you either have to hold it really close or switch to the phone camera. So yeah, but you will get used to that. But it does have its forces and its limitations, of course. So yeah.
Yeah, like any technology. Hans, I've got to ask, as a founder of this app, when you pitched this idea, a few years ago, is it about 10 years since Be My Eyes was launched, roughly? Something like that?
Yes,
Yeah.
almost. Thank you.
Andy's just mentioned then 7.7 million sighted volunteers. You've just been in a partnership with Meta. Did you ever imagine that it would go this far?
Oh, yeah. I was expecting that in a few years we would have a collaboration with four of the major companies in the world. So, no, of course not. And very often when I wake up, I have to think about, oh, is this real or not? I mean, working together with Meta and Microsoft and OpenAI and a number of other companies that are household names. Is a totally amazing feeling for a blind guy from Denmark. And also the whole team is working so hard to make this a reality. And I get to be one of the first person to actually try these new features. So I'm also excited about as a blind person myself. So that's absolutely amazing. And yeah, but also one of the things that I'm really, really happy about, I know this new feature will not be available in that many countries from day one. Maybe Andy, you can say which country it will be available when we launch it. But over the next, I don't know, months or so, it will spread out. And of course, Meta is also a global company. And they have this desire to make their technology available all over the place. So I'm very excited that we can bring this to our blind users across the globe over time, not right now, but that is absolutely the intention that this will be globally available and hopefully in the many different languages and so on. Yeah. Mm.
The initial release, by the way, so right now we're in the midst of quite heavy beta testing of the product, and we want to make sure that beta program runs its course. We, you know, make sure that any final little glitches, if there are any, are ironed out and all that sort of stuff. We want to release a quality product to the market. So the initial product will be generally available sometime later this year. And that initial release will be available firstly in the US, Canada, here in the UK and Northern Ireland, Republic of Ireland, and Australia. That's going to be the first iteration. And as Hans said, you know, the subsequent rollout is a little bit complicated, because you can imagine there are three companies involved here, yeah. All of which have you know, slightly different licensing arrangements. Even you know, EssilorLuxottica themselves, you know, the Ray-Bans are not necessarily available everywhere. So, you know, we've got to work through that with those three companies, but those are going to be the initial countries.
So in terms of availability, you mentioned that it's in beta testing at the minute. Just to be clear on this, this for now is a closed beta among certain test users.
Yeah, I mean, there's many of them, but it's we invited those beta test users in, but it's a defined set of beta test users. It's not available to generally available for anyone to download and use yet.
Okay,
that will come later on this year. Actually, the general availability outside of beta will come later this year.
Yeah, sure. And you've mentioned that this is an ongoing partnership. I mean, I'm already asking more of you, but can you say anything that may be coming down the line? Can you say anything that is currently, you know, anything else that's in the works that we can expect? Or is it far too early yet? Be pushing you on those questions.
I have learned from experience not to say anything too early, because it's always taking way longer than I think. So I think we will just say stay tuned. There will be more, but we cannot say when or how or what yet. So, but we are very, very excited about this collaboration partnership with Meta, as one of the smallest companies in the world to work together with one of the biggest, and I mean, Meta has half the globe as their customers, so it's a major thing to be able to have this partnership and also experience. One of the things that I was really, really happy about when Meta sent their engineers to Copenhagen and we spoke to them, one of them said that he had never experienced a project where so many engineers wanted to be part of that project. I mean, Meta has a ton of projects running all the time, but this project with Be My Eyes was something special that they really wanted to be in on. So it's just amazing to experience that.
A quick one on privacy before I let you go, because there are some people, you know, the discussion has been made that some people are a little bit nervous about this product and, you know, using a company such as Meta, who privacy before hasn't exactly been their strong point in the nicest possible way. But in terms of Be My Eyes, you know, Meta aren't receiving any data. For example, if we make a call and we ask a question, that sort of thing isn't getting passed on to Meta, is it?
Absolutely not. We don't share any data with Meta. Of course, they know, and we will provide them how many calls and were they successful and so on. But no personal data whatsoever is shared with Meta. They don't get access to the videos or anything like that. And please, Andy, if I forget to say something here.
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, our terms and conditions remain as they are. For our smartphone product, and it's the same terms and conditions that fall into this product. So, as Hans said, no, the video calls, the audio stream, none of that is shared as part of the calling process at all. No.
Well, guys, it's really exciting news. Keep in touch. We'd love to hear more when this is available more widely. And congratulations, I guess. This is the news, before we started recording, Andy, you described it to me as it's been a bit of an open secret. I think it's the news that we've all been waiting for, really.
Glad you're as excited as we are, Callum.
Yeah, it's fantastic news. Well, we look forward to hearing more about this and eventually trying it out when it becomes available. But for now, Andy Bailey and Hans-Jørgen Weinberg, thanks for joining us on Tech Talk.
Thank you, Callum.
Yeah, thank you so much.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Now, we always love it when we hear about blind people solving our own problems, and somebody who is trying to do that is blind software developer Mark Murad, who is developing an app to use AI to make PowerPoint presentations more accessible for those of us who are blind or low vision. And Mark joins us now. Welcome in, Mark. Really appreciate you being here. Just give us a bit of background about how you came to this project in the first place.
Okay. So thanks, Dave, for introducing me. My name is Mark. I was actually born fully sighted. I had no problems with my vision until when I was in sixth grade. I started to notice that my vision was getting weaker. I couldn't see the whiteboard. And then eventually I came to my parents and I told them, and we thought that it wasn't a big issue until my vision started to get weaker, even weaker. So we started to visit the doctors and stuff, and I actually made a surgery. I was diagnosed with the optic nerve atrophy, and ever since I knew that one day I would go blind, but I didn't know when. And in 10th grade, this is actually when I went blind, and I started to notice that there were many problems with accessibility when it comes to using JAWS. One of these issues is and PDFs. And I noticed that with PowerPoints, many of the files contained many images and shapes, which made it hard for screen readers to be able to read. So I knew some programming, and I thought that I could be able to solve this problem using programming. And the first time I went to solve this problem, it was actually working. And then it came to my mind that many people face this issue, not only me. So I would try to publish it on the Microsoft Store. And it actually took me 6 months from the day I started working to be able to publish it. And yeah, it was a tough journey, but I did it for the blind community.
And how did you become a programmer? How did you start on that journey?
So I actually took some courses to find out more about programming because I wanted to study computer science in uni. So I just wanted to take an idea on how computer science would be for someone who is blind. And from there, I started to learn more after I came up with the idea that I could solve this problem. And the weird thing actually is, at the time, I thought that these programming skills would help me make the app. But after I started working, I noticed that this was only 10% of what I needed to be able to do this app. So I continued to learn programming by myself online. And this is how I actually became a programmer.
And do you have a preferred programming language or tools that you like to use? I sometimes hear from blind programmers that it increasingly has become quite a visual activity, programming. How did you make that accessible for you?
So the programming language I use one is the C++, and the other is Python, as some of you might know about Python. And I use something called an IDE, which runs this language. And this IDE is called the Visual Studio Code. I think that this IDE is the most accessible one. It's made by Microsoft. And that's how I program.
Right. Okay. And so you had these skills, you'd done the course, and so you felt like you had the tools and the skills, and also of course the insight as a user that often PowerPoint presentations can be challenging to access. So you set about solving the problem. What were the steps that you took? You said it took you 6 months. What happened in those 6 months?
So first I started with a process where I could extract all the text from the PowerPoint display in my app. This was actually the first step, and then I found that I could also solve it with images. But like 6 months ago or 8 months ago, I faced a problem where I couldn't find an AI that would be able to describe images. So I was using an OCR, or optical character recognition, which could identify text in images. And then soon, in the later updates, I used an AI that could be able to describe images. So now it could be able to describe images containing physics equations, chemistry, and things like that. And also, it was really hard because sometimes programming is like, it's not only about what the users see, but there's many things behind the scenes. So you need to make sure that the app is working really well. And you need to make sure if the user misuses the app, it would notify him on how to use it and things like that. It also took me much time to be able to connect the things together. Like, for example, when I would test the app on other devices, the OCR wouldn't be working. So it took me 1 month to try to figure out why. Also, when I was publishing on the Microsoft Store, there were many policies and things like that. It took me some time to be able to manage it in my app.
So lots of challenges and barriers to overcome. Did you have any testers during this time?
So actually, no, because I'm blind. So I was just testing the app by myself. Every time I would add something, I would just test it myself and see what could be better. How can I improve it? And that's how I did it.
All right. And so you've now published your app on the Microsoft Store where everyone can go and download it. Have you had any feedback?
Yeah, many. I make posts on Facebook using the Scribe Me page. And I even post myself. And the feedback I get is actually really nice. Like, I get people telling me how it was helping them in uni, how it's still useful for them in school, and even work. Like, some people use it in work to be able to make PowerPoints accessible, because, like I said, it extracts all text from the PowerPoints and it describes images. So many of the blind community need it, whether they're in school, uni, or work. And some organizations also wanted to collab with me to make PowerPoints accessible. So yeah, it's the first app to be able to make PowerPoints accessible, because most of the apps are just with PDFs. But ScribeMe is mainly about PowerPoints, making PowerPoints accessible.
Right. And that was my next question about feature creep, right? How do you guard against that? Because obviously, as soon as you do a good thing, lots of people come along with lots of ideas of how you can make it even better, right? And I'm sure you'll have received the question like, oh, can I do PDFs as well?
Yeah. So the app actually had PDFs. First, we started with the PowerPoints, and then we added more features like PDFs. But with PDFs, it only works with OCR. It doesn't have image description yet, but I'm working on that. And there's also another feature where you could take a screenshot of what's on your screen using a keyboard shortcut, and it would describe it for you. So if you're on a website and this website isn't accessible, or there's an image, you just press on the shortcut and it would describe the image for you in seconds.
And how do you navigate the whole subject of data privacy and protection, GDPR, all these kinds of questions, right? Because this often comes up when we talk about AI and the use of AI. You know, people often are asking, you know, where does my information go? What happens to it? Is there have you given that any thought?
Yeah, so I actually don't use any of the users' data. Because my app isn't running on any servers from my device locally. So everyone that receives the app is running locally on their device. So I'm not getting any data. However, the AI that I use, they might be getting some of these images for description, and then it gets deleted after the execution. So when you finish with the app, all the data that the AI uses gets deleted.
I see, right. Okay. And, I mean, obviously we want everyone to come try ScribeMe and let us know what you think and whether you have found it to be useful. Have you got any other projects, Mark, on the boil?
No, we're just working on ScribeMe, improving the app. I just want to make the app used for improving the digital world, like documents, everything that you do on your device. I want ScribeMe to be able to solve this problem. And also, one of the reasons why I made this app to be a desktop application is that when I was in school, I can't get my phone and use other apps to describe PDFs or things like that. So I made it on the desktop so it would be easy to access in school, uni, or work. And this is one of the things that makes the app unique, is you don't see many accessible apps on desktop. And that's why I was hoping that I could publish it on the Microsoft Store, and how it made it easier for other people to access.
All right. So anyone wanting to try ScribeMe, do we just search for ScribeMe on the Microsoft Store, is that right?
Yeah. ScribeMe with the no spaces. It's ScribeMe.
Okay, so all one word. And do you think, Mark, this is a commercial proposition, or is this just something you wanted to do for the community?
Well, it's just something that I wanted to do for the community, to help me and the whole community. But running these servers are actually pricey. So even if I added subscriptions to the app, it would only be for me to be able to pay the expenses for these servers. And yeah, I'm trying to keep the app as cheap as possible from the user side, but it won't be free because I'm an individual working on this app. So I don't get funding from anyone. And one of the things actually is we joined a competition called the Vodafone Hackathon. and we ended up winning first place. It was related to accessibility, AI, and disabilities. And now we're actually incorporating a company based on this app. And this is actually a big step because I'm actually just 18 years old. I started working on this app when I was 17. So it was just a small idea, and it turned up to be something big, and not just for me, but for the whole community.
Well, that's marvelous. And as I said at the beginning, you know, we love it when blind people come along and, you know, we find the solutions to our own problems, because often those solutions are better and they really meet the need. So congratulations on what you're doing with this, Mark, and we really appreciate all your hard work. Do you have a website or a social media channel where listeners can follow your work?
Yeah, we have a Facebook page. It's called Scribe Me, like the name of the app. And we also have an Instagram page. It's called Scribe Me _ official.
Excellent. Well, thank you once again, Mark. Good luck, and do stay in touch. And we look forward to hearing more as this project develops.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Mark Murad there, blind software developer and author of Scribe Me, that you'll find in the Microsoft Store on Windows for making your PowerPoint presentations more accessible.
The latest software update from Apple is now out, bringing with it, as it always does, a whole host of new features, both mainstream and accessibility. And one of the things that's got our community talking is this update to Braille Screen Input, this revamp of Braille Screen Input, as I would call it, because it is, well, it's still Braille Screen Input as we knew it. You can still use it to enter text, and that, for the most part, works as it always has done. But then there's this new command mode, which allows you to control your entire device rather than just entering text. I'm going to start this in a little bit of an unusual way. So I'm in the settings at the minute. So I've gone to Settings, Accessibility, VoiceOver, Braille, and then Braille Screen Input. So I'm on the Braille Screen Input settings. And the reason I'm starting here is because there's a few options that you might want to tweak first before you start playing with this. And there's some good explanations in here from Apple as well about what's going on. So I've gone into that area of the settings, and let's just have a listen to what we've got.
Type in Braille. Launch apps and control your device using Braille Screen Input. Place one finger from each hand at the top and bottom edges of the screen and double tap with both fingers at the same time to start Braille Screen Input. To exit Braille Screen Input, slide two fingers in opposite directions.
So we've got a couple of new gestures there, because previously the way to start Braille Screen Input was that you would add it to your rotor, and you would basically do the rotor gesture, which a lot of people struggle with, but it's kind of like turning a little dial on the screen. So you do that gesture, and Braille Screen Input would be there. And you can still use the rotor as well if you want, as you'll see in a second. So I'll keep going through these settings, and I will explain these more as we go on with the demo.
Learn more. Link.
So you've got a bit more of a detailed article there. I'm not going to go into that here.
Use activation gestures. Switch button on. Without using the gestures, you can still start Braille Screen Input using the rotor. When using the rotor to exit Braille Screen Input, move both fingers.
There you go. So you can choose to have the gestures on or off. And this isn't one or the other. You can have both as well if you want. So you could have the gestures and you could have it in the rotor at the same time. It really doesn't matter. It's up to you how you want to start it.
Start automatically when editing text. Switch button off. When a text control is activated, Braille Screen Input will start automatically in Braille entry mode.
So that's pretty self-explanatory. So whenever a text field comes up, you can have it automatically put you into Braille Screen Input. I've chosen to turn this off because there are occasional times where I might not want to use Braille Screen Input necessarily. For me, passwords is a good example of that, where I like to let keychain just autofill my passwords. So it's a little bit easier for me not to have Braille Screen Input come up in that instance. But if you always want to type in Braille, then you could have that. So as soon as you double tap on the text field, Braille Screen Input will pop up.
Keep active until dismissed. Switch button on. After you launch an app or choose an item, Braille Screen Input will stay active in command mode. Swipe left or right with three fingers to exit command mode.
So this is basically if you always want to stay in Braille Screen Input. And again, I'll come on to what exactly that means. It will become clear as we go through this and show you how it works. There's not really anything new in here now, as far as, well, there are some new things with Braille, But as far as Braille screen input goes, the only things that are really new now are a little bit further down. You can customize things like the sounds, because you can have little sounds as you type and as you go through the different modes, and you can choose whether you want those sounds and haptics on or off. But in terms of new thing, major new things that you need to know about, that's pretty much all that's new. So I'm going to go to the home screen and we will try out this command mode first. I'll explain exactly what it is. So I'm just going to do the home gesture.
Home, FaceTime.
And we're on the home screen. So the first thing we heard about was the new gestures. So I'm going to turn my phone into landscape mode. I have my Braille screen input in screen away mode. So the screen is facing away from me. And what I'm doing is I've got one finger from each hand. So I've got one just near the earpiece of the phone, so on the top left edge. And then I've got one where the home button would be, kind of on the bottom right, if you like. Not far off from the charging port, really. And I'm just going to do a double tap with both those fingers. So two finger double tap. What can sometimes happen if you're not close to the edge enough, it can register it as the magic tap. So it can start sometimes playing music or playing your last played media, or it can start dictation mode if you're in a text field. So you do want to be fairly close to the edges of your screen, but it doesn't take much getting used to, really. It's fairly easy once you get the hang of it. So I'm going to do that gesture now. So double tap with two fingers on each edge of the screen.
Braille screen input.
And there we go. We're in Braille screen input. Now, this has put us into the Braille entry mode. And I said I was going to show you the command mode, but I will just show you quickly the other gesture to get out of it. So this is how you exit Braille screen input. Now, you can move to another item in the rotor. You can do the two-finger scrub gesture, which is what I prefer to do. So you essentially move two fingers in a kind of zigzag type motion across the screen a couple of times. But then the new option is if I put both fingers, like two fingers on the screen, and just move them slightly apart, so kind of a two-finger pinch almost, just move them slightly apart away from each other.
Stopping Braille screen input.
And that's got us out of Braille screen input, and we're back to normal operation now. So we'll go back into Braille screen input, two-finger double tap on the edge.
Braille screen input.
And then this is in Braille entry mode, so I'll do a three-finger flick left to go into command mode.
Command mode.
And it says command mode, and you get a little ding, which sounds a bit like a Perkins to me. I don't know if they've done that intentionally. Surely they must have done. But it's a nice little sound. And what we've essentially got now, if you're used to having a Braille display connected to your iPhone, you're probably familiar with the concept of corded commands. And if you're not familiar with that, it basically means if you had a Braille display connected, you would hold down the space bar of your display or of your keyboard and press certain keys to control certain things on the device. And this is essentially as if you've got the space bar held down the whole time. So for example, there is a list on the Apple website of common commands, which you might want to read, because I'm not as familiar with these and I keep forgetting them. As much as I love this new mode, there's a lot of new commands, or new if you're not used to using a Braille display. Anyway, if you're used to using a Braille display or a Braille input keyboard, you'll be right at home here. You'll love this. So for example, space with dot four is how you navigate forward. So this is the equivalent of doing a flick right. So I'm just going to do, we've got no space bar here, obviously, but I'm just going to do a dot four.
Calendar, Friday, photos, camera, clock, 10, maps, weather, notes.
And that's just flicking right through my home screen. Dot one will go left.
Weather, maps, clock, 10:09, camera.
To use the rotor, you can do a dot five, dot 5:06 to navigate through the different rotor items.
Characters, words, headings, speaking rate 55%.
Or you can do dots 2 and 3 to go to the previous rotor items.
Headings, words, characters.
To actually navigate through that particular rotor item, so characters in this case, you could do a dot 6 to navigate forward.
Cap, C, A, M, E, R, Romeo.
And a dot 3 to navigate backwards.
E, M, A, cap, C.
To go to the very top or the very bottom of the screen, you can do dots 1, 2, 3 to jump to the very top. So I'm going to do that now.
FaceTime.
That's jumped me to the top of the screen, which is FaceTime in my case. Dot 4, 5, 6 will jump you to the very bottom, the very last item of the screen.
Mail. One unread email.
And if you want to double tap something, you can. There's two gestures for this, actually. You can do a two-finger swipe right, or you can do .36. So I'll do .36 now.
Mail, mailboxes, back button.
And that's taken me into my emails. If I want to go home, I can do a letter H on the screen.
Home, mail, one unread email.
And that's taken me back to the home screen. So that's how you navigate. If you want to go to things like the control center, you can do a middle C, so dots 2 and 5 on the screen. And as I said, I am talking in terms that kind of assume you're familiar with Braille here, because this is, I mean, you could use this to get, you know, to get yourself used to Braille, but I would say this is aimed at a slightly more advanced Braille user, I think it's fair to say. But, you know, you could use this to help you learn Braille as well, I suppose. But yeah, I'm going to do a middle C, dots 2 and 5, that will take me to the control center.
Control center.
And there's a whole new load of features in the control center as well, but that's definitely another topic. H again to get home.
Safari.
If you want to go to the notification center, you can do dots 4-6. Not really sure why that's that command, but it is. So 4-6.
Notification center. Notification center. Heading.
And that's brought up all my notifications. Again, I'm just going to do H for home.
FaceTime.
To go back, or so basically the equivalent of the two-finger scrub or the escape key on a Bluetooth keyboard, you can do the letter B. If you want to go to the app switcher, you can type in H the same way you do for the home command, but you do it twice quickly. So, 1, 2.
App switcher. Mail. Active.
That's brought me to the app switcher. And you can use all these usual gestures that you would use to get things done. So say, for example, I wanted to close down mail from the app switcher. We heard from that little sound there that it's already on the actions section of the rotor. So I'm going to do .6.
Close mail. Activate. Default. Close mail.
And then 3-6 to activate that.
Closing mail. Messages. Current action. Close messages. Active.
And that's closed mail from the app switcher. So I will exit out of that.
FaceTime.
What if you want to scroll? Well, you can use the letter O to scroll forward to the next page.
Page 2 of 2. Social folder. 11 apps. New item.
So that's moved me to the next page of my home screen. I've only got two pages because I'm way too organised. If you want to scroll backwards, you can do the that same gesture but backwards. So the OW sign, basically.
Home. Page 1 of 2. FaceTime.
And that's moved me to a new page. And you can combine these. So remember I showed you before about how you can type in Braille to open apps on the home screen? You can do that. So let me just talk you through a couple of things and really show you that you can stay in this Braille screen input mode. So I'm going to do a three-finger flick to the left to go into Braille entry.
Braille entry.
So this is now where I'm typing in Braille. I'm going to open up messages.
M, 35, E, 12 apps, S, 3 apps, messages.
So two-finger swipe right to open that.
Opening messages, command mode, messages, edit, button.
Remember that setting we saw where it said keep active until dismissed? What that means is that now that I've typed in some Braille and I've gone into an app, it's put me back into command mode and kept me in Braille screen input. So now if I start doing a .4 again.
Messages, heading, compose, button, search, search field, dictate, button.
I'm navigating forward through the messages app, still in Braille mode. But you can do this Braille entry thing. Before, that was limited to the home screen, really. But you can do this in pretty much any app now. So let's say if I want to message Dave. Let's annoy Dave Williams. So I'm going to do a three-finger flick to the left. You can do the left or the right to navigate between modes. I just prefer doing left for some reason.
Braille entry.
So I'm in Braille entry mode now. If I start typing Dave.
D, tender, 6 items. V, 1 item. Dave Williams. Yeah, I
so that's jumped me to Dave's conversation. So my conversation with Dave. If I do a two-finger swipe to the right.
Moving to Dave Williams. Yeah, I saw this.
So that's moved my cursor to that item. It hasn't launched it like it does from the home screen, but it's moved my cursor to it. And then you heard that little ding, so it's put me in command mode. So to actually get into my conversation with Dave, I can do a dots 3-6, which is the equivalent of double tap.
Command mode selected. Dave Williams. Yeah,
and then I can do how's the best way to do this? I can do dots 4-5-6 to go to the bottom of the screen.
Dictate button.
And then dot 1 to get to the text field.
Message, iMessage, text field.
3-6 to double tap.
Message, text field, is editing, iMessage, insertion point at start.
Now, it's not automatically put me in Braille entry mode for some reason, but that's okay. We can do a 3-finger flick left.
Braille entry.
And then we could type in as we normally would with Braille screen input. So I'm just going to do...
Hello. Just testing out the new Braille screen input mode.
So that was me typing in, hello, just testing out the new Braille screen input mode. And you heard now that it does those little clicks, which is kind of nice. So it sounds a little bit like when you're using the normal virtual keyboard, doesn't it? Those little keyboard clicks. Now, I'm not actually going to send that, but let's say I wanted to, I could send that. I could then go back into command mode.
Command mode.
And go home.
Home, FaceTime.
And then just carry on using my phone as normal, really. So that is, I guess, just scratching the surface, really, of what you can do with Braille now. You've basically got a Braille keyboard connected to your phone the entire time, virtually, obviously. So that was all on the screen. But if you're a Braille user and you prefer using Braille commands rather than using the touch screen, then this is definitely a feature for you. I hope this has been useful. As I said, it's really difficult to cover everything. There are new commands available in this mode for navigating through your text. So rather than just being able to type in and navigate your device, you can navigate the actual text that you type in as well. And there are commands on there for text selection. So you could select and edit your text without exiting the Braille screen input mode. But really, there's only so much we can cover. We've only got an hour long show. So there's only so much we can cover there. But this is an incredible revamp to Braille screen input. I'm really enjoying it, even though I'm quite comfortable with the touch screen. You know, there are times where it's just a little bit easier, especially if I'm doing a lot of typing, you know, filling in forms, for example. It's just easier to stay in Braille screen input mode and keep your phone in that position and just use those new commands to navigate through. So that's just a bit of an intro to it. As I said, there is more. There's more detail on the Apple website about the commands that you can use and the text selection modes that you've got on there as well. So let us know if you're using this. Has this given you the confidence to finally try out an iPhone, maybe? Let us know. You know how to get in touch with us by now. techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
All right, that's it from Tech Talk this time. Thanks as ever for your company. You know what to do. If you like it, share it, spread it. And if you've got a question or comment, then get in contact. It's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Dave Williams, Hubert Pavarkovic, Callum Stoneman and Jackie Brown, until next time, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Trot.